For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
David Cobb is college basketball and college football writer for CBS Sports. We're going to leave the college basketball for the birds today because we have a lot of college football to talk about, but he's on X at David W. Cobb. David, what's happening, man? How's it going?
Man, it's going a lot better for me than it is for your old pal, Mike Norvell.
Not great.
Wow. What a start to college football season. That was quite a treat on Saturday.
But let me say this. You say wow, and you usually say that when you're surprised. Was that surprising? Were you that surprised that Georgia Tech made that a ball game going into the fourth, ultimately won?
I was surprised. It was a 10.5-point spread. I think it closed at. I knew Georgia Tech was capable of hanging in that game, but the way Florida State came out, they punched Georgia Tech in the mouth. Scored right out of the gate, went for two. They looked like a team on a mission, a team with some demons to exercise. They looked like a team that was ready to go out and win that game by 40 points. Sure. And then all of a sudden, they can't get anything going the rest of the game because I guess they scripted out a drive.
Opening scripts.
Sure. And then, which is great. And when you can do that, that's an awesome tool to have as a play caller, and all the shout-outs in the world go to Mike Norvell for that. But then the whole rest of the game, they couldn't get anything going. Georgia Tech has two touchdown drives at 6 minutes or more in the second half of that game. That was really, really impressive the way Georgia Tech was able to dominate on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, I can tell you this from having played for him. He's an opening script god. It's everything after that you have to start questioning and figuring out. He can get a script going for that first drive of the game. And they even capped it off with like the swinging gate, you know, screen pass, two-point conversion. They made it look like they were hungry.
Oh, man, I saw that, and I was like, watch out. Like, what is the live line right now? Because Florida State ain't playing, you know? But then Georgia Tech came back, was able to run the football. Haynes King took care of the football. That was huge in a low-possession game, the fact that he was turnover-free. So that was, I mean, wow, what a game. What a way to start the season. I just hope that's a little taste. And of what we're going to get, if that's the trajectory that this season is going to take, then I'm here for it because that was a really fun game.
Hearing about Florida State going into the year, you heard a lot of propaganda, I think, for the most part, probably from inside that locker room, from the coaches, from the players that sort of leaked out in the media. Pete Thamel even put it out there basically saying he thinks this is the best defensive line in the country. And their offensive line was definitely praised as well. I mean, we talked about it last time I was on the air. Is this going to be a run-first Florida State team that can really get Roydell Williams going and Toa Feely going and Jalen Lucas and all these good backs they have? They got beat the hell up, right? The main source of propaganda, the main source of, hey, this is how this team's going to be this year, ended up being a weak point. That is concerning as hell for the rest of the year with a schedule that still features Memphis. It's going to feature Miami, Notre Dame, Clemson. That's so concerning for them.
Right, yeah. If you're a Memphis fan, you're watching that game on Saturday, you're thinking to yourself, okay, we have a chance. We have a chance to go down to Tallahassee and not just be competitive, not just be in the game, not just put on a good face for the national audience, but to maybe go down there and win that thing. They're still going to be underdogs. They'll probably be more than a touchdown underdogs. But I didn't see a Florida State team this past week that is going to compete for a college football playoff spot or honestly compete for an ACC title. They're already behind the eight ball. That was a league game that they lost to Georgia Tech. And you mentioned some of the other teams on that schedule. So it's a bleak beginning for Florida State, and I don't think we should be that surprised when you look at how many players they lost to the NFL draft. This should have always been viewed as a real rebuilding year. But as we discussed, Gabe, I think a lot of the voters and a lot of the people who assess college football, they felt bad for Florida State. They felt sympathy for what happened to FSU a year ago. And I think that's a large part of the reason why the Noles got all that preseason hype and were the only top 10 team in the ACC going into week zero. And ultimately, it just proved to be a dud. And I'm not saying that they can't recover, that
sure.
One game makes your season, but that was a really, really bad start.
DJU hollered me about his performance. Did it seem like he took a little bit too much flack from you know, the media and social media in general after that performance?
I think there's always this period when you get a transfer quarterback, especially one who has name recognition, where you talk yourself into the fact that he's going to be better at his new school than how good he was at his old school. And I don't know where we get that or why that happens, but you see it all the time, where a fan base talks themselves into a guy that was really pretty mediocre at their last stop. And now all of a sudden they believe that with one off season of preparation under their coach, that all of a sudden this guy's going to turn into an All-American. And there was a lot of that going on with DJU. But to me, in that game, DJU was very much just who he was all along.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a lot of downfield, vertical passing game there. And I think that's as much about their receivers as it is DJU. But that's why we were talking, man. Like, we could see that coming. We were saying, yeah, they're going to run the football a lot. Because you look at that wide receiver room, you look at DJU and his history, of course they're not going to be throwing it 50 times a game and racking up big-time numbers for their wide outs. We thought they were just going to be a run-heavy team because that's sort of the makeup of this roster. But when you can't run the ball and you're ineffective on the ground, then I guess the natural next step is to blame the quarterback for why the offense doesn't work.
Yeah, and then I think he's just a symptom of the biggest issue, and the biggest issue with that offense at least. And listen, I think we could get a better look when it's not in Ireland and they're not playing overseas and they're playing at home and they have a little bit their feet under them a little bit more. But I think the symptom that he is, you know, again, a symptom of this issue, the explosion. I mean, we look at it, Mike Norvell at every stop. Every offense he's had that has, you know, yielded 8 wins or more, very explosive. Here at Memphis, Daryl Henderson Jr., Tony Pollard, DeMonte Coxey, Anthony Miller. You just keep going. Calvin Austin III, Florida State last year, Johnny Wilson, Jordan Travis, Keon Coleman, Trey Benson. They don't have explosive playmakers. I agree with you wholeheartedly, and that's going to be something they're going to have to figure it out. Is their guy, like, truthfully Malik Benson? Because that's not a proven commodity. It just isn't.
Well, but he's the one who you expect something from. He's the Alabama transfer who kind of got stuck behind a logjam of receivers at Alabama, but a former highly touted prospect that Nick Saban thought highly of. So he transfers in, and you're looking and thinking that he could be a breakout star. And Lawrence Tolofili has some juice to him. He's a quick, dynamic type of potential playmaker. So there's a couple of guys on that team. But I wonder to what extent Mike Norvell thought he could keep some things close to the vest, maybe, and not have to reveal everything in their arsenal in week zero when Boston College is sitting at home and they don't have any tape on BC because BC's in year one under Bill O'Brien. And so, obviously, BC's going to have a leg up from a scouting perspective, having watched Florida State play, and he's trying to maybe, you know, keep some things close to the vest and not reveal everything, and then all of a sudden you end up in a ball game. And, you know, you don't know who to rely on or what your fallback is or what you're good at or what you can go to get you 7 or 8 yards and keep yourself ahead of the sticks. And so that was, I think, part of it. And that's part of relying on so many transfers. When you think a guy like Malik Benson, who just came over from Alabama, might be your best wide receiver, but that's not game tested, boy, a close game in the fourth quarter of a low possession sort of affair, that's a really tough place to be when you don't even know exactly what you have with your roster.
Yep. Now, the performance of the week, we'll get off of that game for a second. Performance of the week, do we give it to Montana State? I know they didn't cover the spread against New Mexico, but you beat an FBS team, and you run for 362 yards on 47 attempts. I loved to see that. And there was the 21-point comeback in that fourth quarter. And New Mexico gave the game away. That's how that went. They looked good through three quarters and then just, I don't know, peed down their leg. But shout out to Montana State for consistently running that football. You know I loved that.
I know you did. And that late touchdown drive, the fourth quarter rally, that was week zero was great. As far as week zero
yeah.
go, like that was about as good as a week zero can be. Now I didn't stay up and watch Hawaii-Delaware yeah. State on Spectrum pay-per-view. But man, if you did, you got a treat there too, because Delaware State was in that game. I think they had it tied up at one point. SMU Nevada ended up being a little bit of a banger as well. So Yeah, man, it was as good as a terrible slate of games can be. And obviously the headliner really delivered there with FSU and Georgia Tech.
Yeah, Montana State getting over top of New Mexico. That was an FCS over FBS upset. Do you think we could have another one with North Dakota State visiting Boulder to play Colorado? Do you think,
yeah, we could.
You think we could see something like that? And I don't even know if we can call it an upset, by the way, with Montana State. That wasn't an upset. They didn't even cover the spread.
That's wild, the fact that an FCS team was a 13-point favorite on the road against a Mountain West team. That's wild. So, quick note on North Dakota State, because they're going to get a lot of love going to Colorado to obviously play Deion Sanders. And that Deion Sanders has correctly been vocal about the fact that that's a very unfavorable week one matchup for a team that's still trying to get its legs underneath it. However, the North Dakota State program is undergoing a little bit of a transition because Matt Entz, who was their head coach for, you know, what, 4 or 5 years, led them to a lot of really deep FCS playoff runs. He left to go be a position coach at USC. So this is the beginning of a new era there at North Dakota State. So just something to keep in mind. Like, this is not going to be a North Dakota State team going into Colorado that is operating at peak efficiency. So I might still rock with the Buffaloes straight up. But, yeah, I mean, that could for sure be a really good game.
Well, I mean, North Dakota State has been one of those programs at the FCS level. It doesn't really matter who's coaching them. That once they got the ball rolling, that ball continues. It is rolled directly downhill.
No doubt. So it's the biggest hindrance to progress at Colorado in Deion Sanders' first two seasons is going to be the difficulty of their schedules. I think their Big 12 schedule is as tough as anybody's in that conference this year. And then you add on road games against Colorado State and Nebraska, both of whom you beat last year. Those teams are going to be hungry for revenge. Those are rivals. And you get an FCS power first week of the season. So these are really, really tough schedules that Deion Sanders had to play against, you know, his first two seasons as a coach.
Now, we do have the triple header on ABC. We're going to have Clemson and Georgia first. Then after that, I believe it's Notre Dame and A&M, and then you're going to round out the entire. No, that's the late game. But those two games in particular, Miami and Florida is going to be the second game at 2:30 p.m. Then the 6:30 game will be Notre Dame and A&M. Which game is really, you know, catching your eye for the most part? One that could potentially be close. I wonder about Georgia. We'll see what Clemson looks like early in the day. But I don't know if that'll be the closest game of the three.
Yeah, I'm kind of digging Georgia minus 13.5. The fact that one's under 2 touchdowns, you might want to take a shot on that one.
Yeah.
I just saying, Clemson's got some questions to answer. Georgia's got a lot of known commodities. Of those ABC games, and it's a pretty good slate, my favorite is Miami and Florida, because there's so much pressure on both sides of that matchup. The losing coach is already going to be down in the pits in terms of expectations, what's realistic for them to accomplish. It's kind of a must-win game in week one for both teams, because just to get bowl eligible, Florida's got to put a lot of hay in the barn over the first 6 or 7 weeks of the season. And then Miami, we're talking about as a playoff, you know, potential playoff team. Now, of course, Miami could lose this game against Florida. It's outside the league. And then they could go and win the ACC and get in the playoff that way. But if Miami comes out and loses to a Florida team that a lot of people think won't make a bowl game, I mean, that's going to do nothing to cool the narrative that Mario Cristobal cannot coach. So a lot of pressure on both sides of that matchup, and that's kind of why I like it.
And then the other 11 a.m. game that I'm actually looking forward to that I don't think enough people are talking about on Fox, Penn State going to West Virginia. They're 8.5-point favorites, and they handled this game, I think, last year pretty handily. But West Virginia was a sneaky 9-win team last year.
Yeah, West Virginia got a whole lot better after they lost in Happy Valley at the beginning of last season. They didn't have an offensive identity when they lost that game. They were playing in front of a, you know, crazy Penn State crowd, and Garrett Green just wasn't quite ready. But as that season went on, West Virginia got a whole lot better. And you better believe that you know, that environment in Morgantown is going to be at its peak. So Penn State's got to be ready in a game where, oh, by the way, they're bringing in 2 new coordinators. So,
yes,
you know, that's a little bit of a dicey situation. So, yeah, we're submitting our expert picks for the site, and at the moment, I am on the West Virginia plus 8.5.
Okay. All right. All right. Penn State, I want to see what this new offense looks like, though, because they were boring last year. You bring over the Kansas OC, Andel Kotelnicki, and obviously we've talked about in the past, like, he's never worked for anybody outside of Lance Leipold. So, I mean, it's going to be different. It's a different set of circumstances this year. But that Kansas offense was very inventive, and I think it could be a nice switch up for Penn State if they can get that going.
Well, it was, and the knock on Penn State is the receiver play. But, I mean, can you name me three or four wide receivers who were at Kansas under Andy Kotelnicki? I mean, probably not, right?
No.
Because, you know, they didn't have elite wide receiver play, but he was still able to scheme up some really explosive offense, even without those crazy All-American dynamic playmakers on the outside. And that's going to be the job description for him again at Penn State. He's got a good quarterback in Drew Aller. He's got two really good running backs, and I think we're finally at a place with Penn State where you're not just wondering about the offensive line going into the season. Like, you think they should be pretty good up front. So you put all that together, and you should have a capable offense. But still, Penn State's identity is going to be on the defensive side of the ball, and that's where Tom Allen comes in after being the head coach at Indiana. He's replacing Manny Diaz as the defensive coordinator. And, you know, does he still have it? Like, is he still a top-notch defensive coordinator? And if so, then this Penn State team is going to win that game. I just can't see Penn State and West Virginia playing a very high-scoring game. So I think plus 8.5 on their home field, I think the Mountaineers can handle that.
Now, overarching topics I want to get to about week zero and sort of what we saw. We saw game day. Nick Saban said he loves Memphis as the best group of five team, but he did use Memphis State. Here's my biggest question about that whole thing. Does he know that it's Memphis now, or is he just using the throwback, or does he still think it's Memphis State? I have questions about that. We don't know.
Hey, there's an age cutoff. If you were born before 1960,
it's always going to be
Memphis State. Yeah. Old habits die hard, man. You know, it's like, okay, here, I got another one for you. Everybody wants to call it Middle Tennessee now. I'm like, what are we talking about? It's MTSU. Like, I will write MTSU in an article, and they will change it to Middle Tennessee when it publishes. And I'm like, what's going on here? So I was at MTSU a couple weeks ago, and I was like, I was talking to some of their athletic department staffers, and I was like, guys, is it Middle Tennessee or MTSU? And they were like, just call us whatever you want to call us. And
that's not good for branding. Like, call us whatever you want to call us.
Right. So read more at CBS on that soon. I feel like at this point, you know, you should realize it's not Memphis State. But again, I go back to that pre-1960 cutoff. If you were born before 1960, you were grandfathered in. Maybe you should be allowed to call it Memphis State.
Yeah, I didn't get offended by it. I know there are some people that were offended by it, but it is what it is. I've always called for, on the football side too, I would love some Memphis State throwbacks with the old silver helmet and the MSU logo on the side. That would be really fun. They have all these uniform choices and combinations. I think that would be a good addition to the Memphis repertoire.
Hold on. What year or what kind of decade was it when they dropped Memphis State and just went to University of Memphis?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. So, 90s? 80s? 90s? Late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, I mean, the key is you got to find... Okay, Wikipedia says it was up until 94.
Okay.
So, you just got to find a team that was decent while they were called Memphis State, and then, like, honor that team with the throwback.
Well, but did you see that? But do you remember those uniforms? I mean, have you seen pictures? maybe you don't remember them. Those were your very early formative years. But, like, the silver helmet with the MSU logo on the side, the blue jersey and the silver pants, I thought that was a slick look.
Yeah, it'd be nice. It'd be nice, you know, because they've done that with basketball.
Yes.
They've brought back the old throwbacks for Memphis on the hardwood. I like it. The throwback things are in, man. I did a story on somebody who's doing throwbacks this year recently, and they look really good when you do them right.
Yep.
You got to do them right, though. You can't just decide to do it and then only, like, you know, not really put the effort in, and then you end up with some half-baked thing where it's like, wait, is that a throwback? Is that an alternate? Like, you really got to go, you know, lean in hard if you're going
to
do it.
And I'm not trying to, like, listen, there were some really the great players in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, really early, you know, leather helmet type players. But some of the ones in the Big Ten, you can miss me with those. Those do not translate to today's uniform. We were not wearing the same type of gear, all right? Like, I think Illinois rolled one out one time. Some of them are gross. The old throwbacks from the Big Ten.
Well, they're just so plain. There's no, it's just like two very bland color schemes and a helmet with a stripe down.
And there's random stripes somewhere too. Like, it's just gross. It is gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Oklahoma is the one I was thinking of. They're breaking out a throwback this year, and it's pretty stark. And it's the, you know, they ID'd the era, right, that they want to honor with the jerseys. And so, you know, I think it'd be good, especially like for Memphis, kind of in this season of transition with the Liberty Bowl or something. If you busted out some old historical uniforms one week, just to kind of give the fans something to focus
what they
on,
want.
Other than the cranes and all that.
Yeah, and then also the new clock rules, where unless it's the last 2 minutes of a half, you're not stopping the clock for out of bounds. Then you have the 2 minute warning. What'd you think about the game speed and sort of those new little wrinkles? I noticed them, but I thought I noticed them for the better. I kind of enjoyed the clock continuing to roll.
I think Georgia Tech did too. I think that was part of their strategy with those two super, super long scoring drives they had in the second half. I mean, they had the ball with, you know, what, 5 minutes to go near midfield. And you're thinking, all right, are they going to try to run this thing out? And it's actually one of those situations where I thought the two-minute warning was a little bit of a disadvantage because I think they just wanted the clock to keep on running. And thankfully for them, it came at the end of the play clock, and so it didn't really set them back too much. But that's an interesting wrinkle that's going to take some getting used to, the fact that there's now a two-minute warning in college football. I don't want to make any sweeping conclusions from one game,
right?
But especially a game where both teams were you know, content to keep the ball on the ground. But there were not a ton of possessions in that game. It was more like an NFL game in terms of the number of possessions. I believe it was 14 total,
yep.
Seven for each team. And so if that's more the norm of what we're going to get in college football, that could shorten the game length, and it could reduce the amount of scoring that we see. And so certainly those clock rules are going to have an impact. And the two-minute warning, man, that's – I don't know how I'm ever going to get used to that. I mean, seriously, like the CFP 25 Xbox game is like the way that I am getting acclimated to those new rules, because it does feel a little bit different.
Yeah, I need a spread tempo coach to say we didn't lose the game. We just ran out of time. I just need that before the year's over, because it's going to be very interesting to watch, like, Lane Kiffin's and, you know, I think, you know, Josh Heupel at Tennessee. Mm-hmm. They get into some of these rough and tumble matchups where these possessions are going to be limited. I want to see how they handle that, because that's going to be a massive wrinkle for their style of play.
Right, especially when everything is about rhythm. And the more you can get out on the field and build that rhythm, the more you're going to get rolling, and it's cyclical. But if you spend the entire half on the bench,
yep,
and you only get three possessions and a half or something, it's really difficult to build that rhythm. So it could have an impact. I don't think the spread it out, Jeff Levy, Josh Heupel, Lane Kiffin types love this.
Right.
I think it does make life a little bit harder on their offense, because they are all about maximizing the number of possessions in a game and kind of wearing down the opposing defense just with an onslaught of sorts. And so, yeah, that's something to consider. The flip side is that, you know, does their own defense get a little bit more rest in a game with fewer possessions? Because that's always the rub or the knock on the way those teams play. It's that, well, you don't want to be Tennessee's defensive coordinator, because you're going to get put in a lot of really tough situations. But now if you've only got to defend 8 or 9 possessions a game versus 10 or 11, if that's what it ends up being, then maybe that actually kind of helps the defenses of these programs that have this high-octane style.
Yep, I think we'll see that early in the year. We have a massive slate on Thursday. We have some Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. So everybody get ready for week one. I know David Cobb will be. We'll talk again on Wednesday, though. We'll have more to discuss then.
All right, man. Sounds good.
Yes, sir. That's David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football writer for CBS Sports, and he's brought to you every day by Oxbow, the family-owned and operated retail store that has been in Memphis for over a decade, and they want you to go by. And it's conveniently located, so you pass it every day. If you drive Poplar, you pass it every day. Instead of passing it, go to it. Get off Poplar on June Road behind the Amoco Station, 964 June Road to be exact, and you get everything you possibly need. And you are going to be on, you know, tailgating. You're going to have to get a polo that looks good if you're a Memphis, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Alabama fan. fan, you're going to need something like that, and you're going to need the tailgating gear. They have cups, coolers, koozies, tumblers, whatever you need, they have over at Oxbow, 964 June Road. But on top of that, they have hunting and outdoor essentials. They have vintage vinyl. They have sports memorabilia. But that clothing, I do want to mention the brands, Gentile, Free Fly, Fair Harbor, Duckhead, Mizzen, and Maine, and your favorite teams. You're going to love it. They have everything from a casual look to a very nice up look that you could go out to a wedding in. Just make sure you get over to 964 June Road, off Poplar on June Road, behind the Amoco Station to Oxbow. And if you don't want to go there and you don't want to get out and go see that store, you can go online. ShopOxbow.com is where you can find them online. ShopOxbow.com. And here's what I'll do to give back to you, because I want to do that for you, because my good friends at Oxbow have given me a promo code that you can use at ShopOxbow.com. It's The Gabe Show. All caps, no spaces. The Gabe Show. You use that at ShopOxbow.com, you get 20% off. So whether you're going online or in-store to 964 June Road, I want you to remember to shop local, shop Oxbow. Now we have a massive mega deal that has been signed in the National Football League, and it's C.D. Lamb with the Cowboys. It finally got done. I need to take you behind the scenes and let you know how big of a deal this is, how needed this was from the Dallas Cowboys. We'll do that on the list.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one. Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline. Now back to the Gabe Kuhn Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Now, you've heard us talk a lot about FanDuel, America's number one sports book. Well, we have something a little different for you. Now through September 22nd, all FanDuel customers can bet $5 and get 3 weeks, a free trial of NFL Sunday Ticket from YouTube and YouTube TV. Then, with what we're going to talk about, C.D. Lamb, you can go watch Cowboys. And also, you can catch it right here on 92.9 FM ESPN on the radio. But then, with a YouTube TV base plan, you'll be able to watch every regular season Sunday afternoon out-of-market game. All you need is a Google account and a current form of payment, and you can cancel anytime. Just visit FanDuel.com/GabeK. That's G-A-B-E-K. Again, G-A-B-E-K to download America's number one sports book. You must be 21 plus and present in Tennessee. Full price of NFL Sunday Ticket will be automatically charged seasonally after the free trial. No refunds, terms, restrictions, and embargoes apply. Gambling problem? Make sure that you reach out to the Tennessee Red Line at 901-800-889-97.
Yeah, called Gabe.
Yeah. But, yeah, take
a call Gabe, your local DJ. Call your local host.
Then I'll give you 1-800.
And you'll go, seems like you have a problem, sir.
Yes. I'll talk. Can
you imagine
I'll help talk you through.
Can you imagine calling the gambling line? It's like big offensive lineman looking at his gum. Hey,
it's how's Gabe.
Gabe Kuhn.
How do you answer the phone? Is it a hello? Do you give people a hello?
Hi, my name's Brad, and I got a little thing where I like to gamble too much on my phone.
And I hear also, Brad, that you're not the best gambler in the world.
Terrible. Freaking awful. They named a radio bit after it, bro.
Yeah, I'm going to give them my number and say, it's Gabe. I have a gambling problem. I just bet $1,000 on South Dakota State to beat Oklahoma State this weekend.
And I'm bad at it. Like, not only do I have a problem, I'm not good at it. Yeah. That's funny.
Well, maybe you'll get better. We'll get you some picks heading into the weekend for week one of college football, and maybe you'll be better.
Looking forward to the picks. More importantly, looking forward to this segment to see if I need to add CeeDee Lamb to my fantasy roster.
Cowboys and all-pro wide receiver CeeDee Lamb have reached an agreement today on a record 4-year, $136 million deal that now makes him the second highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. The deal includes $38 million in a signing bonus. That's the largest ever given to a wide receiver. And that $38 million, they're going to have to bridge the gap because he's got $100 million guaranteed altogether.
That's
so
tough.
Good for CeeDee Lamb. And this continues an offseason where we have seen wide receiver after wide receiver after wide receiver, I'll add one more, after wide receiver, get ridiculous amounts of money. The number that we're up to right now in guaranteed money on wide receiver contracts signed this offseason, $1.287 billion with a B, is owed to all of these wide receivers who have signed deals. He becomes the 11th receiver to sign a lucrative contract. contract this offseason alongside Justin Jefferson, DJ Moore, Amon-Ra St. Brown, AJ Brown, plenty others on top of that. And it is an important signing, an important thing to get done by the Dallas Cowboys. This was mismanaged, though. I would be remiss if I didn't bring that up first and foremost. Jerry Jones talked way too much this entire time, rubbed CeeDee Lamb the wrong way, made him feel a type of way. He missed entire training camp, and you end up still paying him the second highest contract for a non-quarterback in NFL history. You bet against yourself, effectively. You could have got it done last offseason. You could have got it done early this offseason before all of these contract drops, before Justin Jefferson set the record, before Amon-Ra St. Brown got $30 million per. You could have done it before all that, but you didn't. You waited, and now you have to pay him a massive amount of cash. So that's my first thing. Now, for CeeDee Lamb getting back to the Cowboys, I have said, because I believe this, if they didn't have CeeDee Lamb heading into this year for the whole year, let's just talk about it that way, I think they'd be a bottom five offense. And the reason I say that, not only does CeeDee Lamb last year, did he account for 30% of their offensive yards and 25% of their touchdown production, let's go through all of the stats he was first or second in last season. Targets, he was first with 181. Reception, first with 135. Receiving yards, second with 1,749. Yards after the catch, first, 680. Receiving touchdowns, 12, he was second. First downs, second with 80. I mean, you just keep going down the list. He was tied for second in 100-plus yard receiving games. He was first in first half receiving yards. He was third, I believe, here in EPA per target and also receiving yards per game at 102.9. All of those things go to equaling a very important player on the surface. But then when you dig into it deeper with Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb and the brain trust they have, Dak's attempts in 2023 from an EPA per play standpoint, it was at 0.55 with CeeDee Lamb. When a play didn't go to CeeDee Lamb, 0.18. Completion percentage when throwing to CeeDee Lamb, 74.3% for Dak Prescott. It went down to 68.9 when he did not target CeeDee Lamb. Yards per attempt with CeeDee Lamb on the field and thrown at, 9.7 yards per attempt. And then with anything not thrown at CeeDee Lamb, 6.9 yards per attempt. He's so damn valuable to that Cowboys offense. It has been mind-blowing to see it go this long without him getting a deal, but now he has his deal. They lock him up for the future, and hopefully, going into the future, they lock up a quarterback by the name of Dak Prescott, and they lock up a guy by the name of Micah Parsons, so they continue to be one of the powers in the NFC. Because I thought they lost a lot of momentum this offseason. They can gain it back this year. It's going to take some work, but then next offseason, they're going to have to capitalize and take advantage of the guys they have on their roster. Make sure you sign them back. Make sure you bring them back, and you'll be all good going into the future.
I mean, they had to do it. That's it. I mean, it was CD or bust, which is your, I think your point is valid about you always going to end up in it here.
Isn't that one of the strangest things? I don't understand why there's some NFL franchises that decide to put these things off when they know they're going to sign.
You're
going to
end up there.
You're going to end up at some point paying this guy. Why don't you get it out of the way early?
Even the Ravens with Lamar Jackson was the same deal.
Let's talk about, true. But let's talk about it this way. Look at the best NFL franchises in the NFL right now.
Yep.
Or NFL teams, I should say. Because the Detroit Lions are not a great franchise, but they've done a really good job of paying
the new regime is awesome. Yeah.
The Chiefs, though, start with them.
Yep.
You paid Patrick Mahomes early. You gave him a massive contract. That contract looks
amazing, so great right now.
Yep. Like, unbelievably good right now.
Yep.
You paid Travis Kelce. You got him to take a pay cut because you got out ahead of these things.
Yep.
You pay the guys you need to pay. Look, the Lions.
Minnesota paid their receiver early, too.
Lions, this offseason.
Yeah.
You have Amon-Ra St. Brown getting his money after a 1,500-yard receiving season. Mm-hmm. You have Taylor Decker getting his money at left tackle to lock him up for the next few years. Mm-hmm. Penei Sewell, you pay him ahead of time. Yeah, it's a massive contract. But guess what? You have him locked up, and he's mid-20s. Jared Goff gets locked up on a big deal. They got out ahead of all these things, signed them back because they know that with this regime, they feel confident of being a playoff contender. Then also go to the Eagles. The Eagles get out ahead of these things. Yep. Signed Devontae Smith early. Went out of their way to trade for A.J. Brown back in the day from the Titans. Signed him. Like, they have gone out. Jalen Hurts, they tried to lock up. I know he's still up there with one of the top paid quarterbacks at in the NFL right now. But this guy, they got out ahead of it because they knew they needed him going into the future. He's a face of the franchise. There's some organizations and franchises that understand it, and there's some that still try to sit on their hands, pinch pennies, and try to bring this price down. The price doesn't come down. You're dealing with a new type of player. You're dealing with a player that understands that this NFL could, this job could end at the snap of a fingers. Really a snap of a bone, quite frankly.
Sure.
So they want their money.
But
they want their money while they can get it.
Yep. And I think that's the situation with Dak Prescott, which indicates he's not going to be a Cowboy next year.
We'll see. It's so strange that they're sort of moving the way they are around that.
Well, you're better off paying them early, too, because generally, if you are going to save money, and you may or may not, if you are going to save a little dollar here or there, like Kansas City with Mahomes, you do that because you signed him super early as opposed to the late time.
And let's extend this contract out some ways.
Right. Let's do a 10-year deal.
Yes.
What?
Let's do something like that. I know it's unheard of.
Yeah.
But sometimes when you have that type of talent, let's put a little more years on that to make that contract age better.
Well, if I recall, I don't know how long Mahomes is in that deal. I think he's 5 10. Years. It's a 10-year deal, but I think he's about, what, 5 or 6 in it?
Oh, I don't think he is, no.
I think he's 4?
He's very early in that deal. This is a great question. I'm glad you're bringing
Mahomes,
this up. Patrick Mahomes on SpotTrack.
Salary. Yeah.
I mean, he's very early in that deal, Brad.
He restructured it in 23, and it's between...
It looks like his extension, it kicked in, he's 4 years in, or 3 years in going on 4.
So, you got another 7 years of that kind of a deal.
But his base salary this year is only $9.8 million.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, so that for the cap, that's amazing. You know, the point is a good one because at the time when they signed Mahomes, people were out of their minds.
$500 million?
You got to look at it differently.
Right, because a lot of these contracts are either front or back loaded.
Right.
So they may not see all the money.
Right.
Right?
But like, Shohei did it in baseball. Like, Shohei's making like $2 million a year. Now he has the highest contract
value. That's guaranteed.
Yeah.
That's guaranteed, too.
Yeah. It is guaranteed at the end, but you're trying to deliver it so you can do the structure.
I think where people go wrong is likening it to the NBA or Major League Baseball.
Right.
NFL, these are not guaranteed contracts. They get the guaranteed money. That's why it's such a big deal to get that high guaranteed money.
Well, which is why CD probably signed this deal because he got the largest guaranteed amount.
Yeah, largest signing bonus.
Over Jefferson. So even though Jefferson's going to make more aggregate, his signing bonus is the largest in NFL
history. But here's the thing. If Justin Jefferson snapped his leg tomorrow and they ended up cutting him, he's not going to see the back end of that $140 million that he's supposed to be owed.
Right.
He has to live out that contract
to
get all that money.
I would take either.
100%. But in the NFL, I think people get lost in the sauce.
They really
do. That big number sort of gets in their way. You need to look at that guaranteed money to realize how good that contract is.
I want to get to break, but last trivia question on Patrick Mahomes, and I want to see if you can guess this. What do you think Patrick's, when he signed that 10-year $450 deal, what was his signing bonus guaranteed? I think the answer will shock you. I want you to take a guess.
It was somewhere in 100. It was lower than it should have been. Was it?
I can't wait to hear your answer.
$120 million is what he got guaranteed. Really?
63.
That's all he's guaranteed.
63 is what he got on signing when he signed the deal. Now when he probably re-upped the deal 3 years later.
Yeah, I'm more sure guaranteed money.
Yeah, you renegotiate your signing bonus again and you get some more cash up front. But like the idea that's really why they loved it too. They're like, not only do we like what we're getting on an annual, they're like, we just paid the greatest quarterback who we think is in this generation $63 million signing bonus.
And I think there's also this thing. You need to be nice to these guys on the front end so when it comes time to restructure, when they realize their value's that high. Because
they like you.
Patrick Mahomes could have come back to the table 15 times by now and been like, yeah, you're guaranteeing all 450 at this point. I brought you 3 Super Bowls. Right. You're going to guarantee every bit of this, then we can move forward. But he doesn't do that because they took care of him on the front end, and they you have good faith built up.
And they've done a great job around him. Like, some of these guys, like the Cowboys, for example, are a friggin' train wreck. Like, CD, go get your money because your franchise is a joke right now.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, because who knows? In 2 years, If CeeDee Lamb steps back up to the table and he's the best wide receiver in the NFL statistically, he could be like,
deal sucks.
I need more. I need more. Yeah. But if you would have got out ahead of it, said that you were in a rush, in a hurry to try to get that deal done on the front end, treated him he may not come to the table so fast.
Crazy money, man. It's wild.
Yeah, it is wild. But let's go ahead and grab a break on that note, and we'll get to small talk and get you up out of here for the day right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hi, this is Bob Kessling, inviting you to follow all the exciting action of Tennessee football all season long, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Here on 92.9, we talk ball every weekday from 4 till 7 p.m. Except right now, it's time for Big Man Small Talk on 92.9's Gabe Kuhn Show.
And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Now, we always talk about, well, at least I guess some older folks talk about, this new age of athlete. They're getting soft on us. This new generation, they're getting soft on us. Know what I want to ask, though? Is the new generation of football coach getting soft on us? Because I want to go to college football right here. One, we go to primetime Deion Sanders. He banned a Denver Post reporter by the name of Sean Keeler from asking questions in pressers. He has had unique language in his contract. I can't believe Colorado allowed this. But he has unique language in his contract that states he's only required to speak to mutually agreed upon media. Okay, it's like state media in Russia, but regardless, Keeler apparently does not fall under this after using phrases like false prophet, deposition Dion, planet prime, Bruce Lee Abias, the Dion Kool-Aid, and circus in his reporting of Sanders in the Colorado program. I get why Dion Sanders can be a little bit frustrated, but again, talked about it with Harold Grader earlier, you're a 4-8 football coach. Criticism comes with that.
Facts.
That's the truth of it. Yep. And you invite all the criticism.
Yes.
You bring a lot of cameras behind the scenes. People see it. It happens.
Yeah,
sometimes.
You're the one who has a documentary film crew following
and
you.
Can I be honest? Harold Grader probably made the best point of the day.
He is?
You don't have to call on the guy.
Right.
If you're at Colorado,
that's right.
You don't have to call on the damn guy. And you know what Dion could do instead of banning him contractually? From asking
just
questions,
never call on him.
Don't call on him, and if he does get called on, be like, "I'm not answer. I won't answer. No comment."
And more other next.
Just move
question.
On. Yeah. He has made a circus out of this whole thing.
No question.
Now, I also want to go to Dabo Sweeney. Everybody knows my favorite guy.
This was the one that got me today.
So
I think this is
we're
going to
have this
is
calls
ridiculous.
With Josh Heupel on Friday.
He will take calls.
He will take calls.
Now this is ridiculous.
Dabo Sweeney will no longer take live callers on his radio show.
That's ridiculous.
I think the decision comes after the encounter he had with Tyler from Spartanburg during last football season.
I love that these people
after
are named.
Clemson started 4-4. Tyler from Spartanburg basically went up there and asked, "You make $11.4 million this year. Do you think 4-4 is good enough?
Ooh.
How do you feel about getting paid $11.4 million and starting off 4-4 at a national championship caliber program?" And Dabo went on a 5.5 minute tirade on how you're the problem, Tyler from Spartanburg. I can't get over the fact, did Tyler from Spartanburg break his spirit? Did he break his spirit last
year? I remember that call. I remember hearing the audio of that. And Dabo, you know, I think it hit too quick. It hit too quick. You know, like he was clearly rattled by that. Which he shouldn't be, by the way, because maybe this is from somebody who doesn't make $11.5 million a year, but like, part of that is battle pay, bro. Like, the 11.5 is there because of that.
The criticism you're going to take, the media availability you have to have, that's why you get paid millions of dollars a year.
It's a fact.
And that's why I ask the question, are some of these college football coaches and football coaches in general getting a little soft on us?
Yes, is the answer.
I think so.
The Dabo one irks the hell out of me. Because Dion, with Dion, you can kind of, not that you give him a pass, because I agree with
you.
He's your
always
point.
Done this, though.
It's kind of his deal.
Always done it.
He is going to be the guy. Like, this is what Colorado signed up for. It's why they put it in his, which I think is ridiculous, contract, where he gets to write out dudes from being in his, which was a new development, by the way. We didn't know that Dion. Contract had that clause in it.
Colorado's soft for putting that in the contract.
That's soft. That's, you know, Colorado, you're desperate. You were just desperate. You were maybe too desperate. And you were desperate. Like, you were coming off a one-win season. Now, here's the thing.
You're letting Dion do the state-run media thing. That's not usually a good idea.
In Dabo's case, I think he's going to be getting more away with it because he's going to have a squad that's decent. Now, with Dion, Deion's problems might be not greater than his solution to it, which is to win ball games.
We'll see, but also expectations dramatically different at those.
That's fair, games. But I mean, last year at least Deion rode the whole season with those three wins he got at the front end,
right,
including the TCU, and we didn't realize TCU was absolute garbage. But like, if you go through his win losses this year and you try to do that exercise, like,
I know.
It's tough. Like, Cincinnati might be one.
Going to be hard to get to a bowl game.
It's rough.
Yeah.
It's really rough for Deion. So yep. I get it. But Dabo, that's a joke.
Yep, I hear you. No calls. Tyler from Spartanburg broke
on,
his damn
I can't wait
spirit.
Till. Hey, you'll take calls can't on this show it. Later in this as we
maybe.
Get into football.
Yeah, it's possible.
I love
Quite
it when you
possible.
Do open phones.
Yes. But, you know, right now we can't do the open phones because we got to get up out of here. That's going to be a wrap for today. Thanks to Harold Grader and David Kahn for their contributions to the show. Tomorrow, Jeff Calkins and Christian Fowler. But we're going to go ahead and pass you off to Amber and Ian in the meantime. For Brad, I'm Gabe. Be easy, be safe. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
For Trent. Number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.